from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Joe Biden increased his lead over rival Bernie Sanders in yesterday's Democratic primary contests. Biden captured Michigan and three other states as Washington continues to count ballots, and North Dakota was called this morning for Sanders. At 9, we'll review the results and what they mean for both campaigns. Then at 9:30, the Archdiocese of San Francisco has closed 90 Catholic schools in San Francisco, Marin, and San Mateo to head off the spread of coronavirus. Some Bay Area public schools have also closed. We'll talk about how administrators make the decision to close schools and what closures mean for students and their families. Join us next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
We share a common goal, and together we'll defeat Donald Trump. We'll defeat him together.
That was former Vice President Joe Biden addressing a crowd of supporters after last night's Democratic primaries. Six states held contests yesterday, and by most measures, Biden emerged victorious over Bernie Sanders, winning Michigan, Missouri, Mississippi, and Idaho, and dominating in nearly every demographic. We'll recap the results and what they mean for both campaigns, and joining me is KQED's Political Breakdown crew, the A-Team. Scott Schaefer is here with us. Good morning, Scott.
Hi, Michael.
Good morning, Marisa Lagos.
Hey, Michael.
And good morning to Guy Maserati.
Good morning.
Glad to have you all aboard. And Marisa, let me begin with you. This was a big night for Joe Biden, obviously, and it had a lot to do, once again, with turnout. They turned out for him. Suburban women turned out for him. African Americans turned out for him. And the fact of the matter is the millennials and the youth did not turn out in the way that Bernie Sanders expected or hoped.
No, and I think perhaps even as important, we saw, at least according to early exit polls and returns, some of those white, more working class men come back to him that had gone for Trump in 2016. It was a huge night for Biden. I think really if you look at the map in a place like Michigan, he won every county at this point. It's huge. It's what he needed. And it's remarkable. I mean, if you think about where we were just a couple weeks ago, you know, I really feel it almost feels like Democratic voters were just sort of waiting to see like who the consensus candidate was. And it almost feels like there's more excitement around Biden than there was when there was this huge mess of candidates. And I wonder if that's just the clarity. It does seem like the electorate is sort of ready to turn their attention to beating Trump. And I think the real question now is, what does Bernie Sanders do in the coming days?
Well, that's a question I have for you, Scott. Does Bernie Sanders really have a pathway here, particularly when you look at Jim Clyburn, who started this whole thing off in South Carolina, saying maybe we shouldn't even have a debate necessarily. He's the presumptive nominee.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, it is hard to find any silver linings for Bernie Sanders in the results last night. Even his closest supporters are saying that. On the other hand, I think the last thing the Democratic establishment wants to do is to be seen or perceived as pushing Bernie Sanders out of the race. I mean, there's already sort of a tendency on the part of Sanders and many of his supporters to think about the establishment as the enemy and to think that the system is rigged. And I'm sure that Joe Biden is mindful of that. He was actually said some nice things about Biden and his supporters last night, maybe a little bit of a nudge toward him.
You mean about Sanders? And his
about Sanders saying, you know, all the energy and the passion that they've brought into the race. But, you know, look, there will probably be a debate on Sunday without an audience, without a spin room. And, you know, I'm sure Bernie Sanders is as good at math as anybody, and he can see that the path forward for him gets harder, not easier. I mean, the states that they're going to now, states like Florida, Biden's ahead like 40 points in some of the polls. States like Georgia, states with large African-American populations like Illinois and Ohio. So, you know, he can sort of probably read the tea leaves, but I don't think the establishment should be seen as pushing
him out. I was pretty shocked that Clyburn said that, just because of everything you're talking about. And I think given the fact, if you look back at 2016, you know, Bernie Sanders was a team player. A lot of his supporters were not necessarily on board with that, but I think he did try to sort of coalesce the party. And I think that, you know, the fact that he decided not to speak last night, I think even if he decides to debate, I don't think that's necessarily a a bad thing. I think there's a balancing act that should probably be going on in both of these candidates' heads around both what needs to happen to beat Trump, but also for them what it means to sort of try to bring the party together. And we saw, I think, Biden starting to do that. But like, why would I don't know?
Right, but I think that's Biden's responsibility to coalesce the party, and especially to bring out younger voters in November. That it doesn't. We've seen really poor turnout throughout the primaries for younger voters. Just last night, down 3 percentage points from 2016 in Michigan, 5 percentage points in Missouri, 7 percentage points in Mississippi. But young voters are still going to be important for a Democratic coalition in November. Just compare the results in 2008 for Barack Obama to 2000 with Al Gore. Young voters do play a big role in the general election. And you saw a little bit of that from Joe Biden last night in his speech, trying to, welcome in Bernie Sanders and younger supporters. But now that's going to be his job from now to November.
This is Guy Maserati, by the way, reporter and producer for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And Guy, let's get your take on this. I mean, how does Joe Biden really bring in those younger voters? They're angry at him. Many of them are angry at him because the reason Scott brought out, they think things were rigged. But also, he's not on the Green New Deal. He's not on board on that. He's not on board on Medicare for All. These are big issues.
Right. And I think part of that is not signaling that he wants Sanders to get out of the race. And I think he did a good job of that last night. He didn't, declare victory. It wasn't as celebratory a speech as you might expect from someone who's had the 2 weeks that Joe Biden has had. And I think kind of letting this process play out, there's a number of different paths Bernie Sanders could take at this point. I mean, he's going to speak at 10 o'clock. I think we'll know more then. There's the Howard Dean path in 2004. Once a nominee seems to have been chosen, everyone clears the field. There's 1992 when Bill Clinton really cemented his standing on Super Tuesday, accelerated that a week later. But Jerry Brown hung in the race to the very end, was beaten.
But Senator Sanders is not a member of this party. I mean, this is a whole different anomalous situation in that sense.
Right. But I think he knows his standing in this party and his standing, among liberal Democratic voters. I think he knows that bears the responsibility of that to bring those voters along, which, as Marisa said, he did try to do in 2016. I mean, he appeared with Hillary Clinton. He, I think, tried his best. There's no guarantee those voters.
I think also they have Biden and Sanders have a long relationship, and I think they like each other. I don't think that was true with Hillary and Sanders in 2016. I think Hillary to this day feels like Bernie Sanders really didn't try to help her win. Did some things. Did less than he could have done.
By the way, Rush Limbaugh is saying this is really all about getting Hillary back as the nominee.
let's not pay attention to it.
I think to
your guys' point, there's this interesting. One number that was floating around like Twitter a lot last night was the difference between, the sort of gap, the chasm between the people at exit polls in these states who said, I do support Medicare for All. It was like 60% in some places. And yet, the Sanders vote was like 45%. And I think that speaks to a couple things. One is, yes, you're right. Joe Biden is clearly a more center left candidate. But I've said this before. This is the most progressive platform any candidate in the Democratic Party has possibly ever run on, if you look at the entire field. And then also the fact that I think that we just keep have to talk about this. People want to beat Trump on the Democratic side, and that seems to be their calculation.
They're not voting on issues.
No.
Well, and I think also last night, especially in Michigan, but also in Missouri, when you look at the results comparing 2016 with last night, you see in many ways that Bernie Sanders' strength in 2016 was in some ways less about him and more about Hillary Clinton. There were a lot of voters that just did not like him. If you look at union households, which Bernie Sanders won 4 years ago, Biden won by 25 points in Missouri, according to the exit polls. That's an extraordinary turnaround. And you have to think that some of that, not all of it, but some of that was just a personal animosity toward Hillary and maybe Bill Clinton a little bit as well.
But so many voters in the last election voted non-establishment. They voted for Trump because they were non-establishment. They voted for Bernie Sanders because they were non-establishment. So they're going back. This is, the new normal again is what it's being called. They want to go back to someone who's been talking about decency and humility and compassion and all that sort of thing. But also who's talking, and I think talking really with strong rhetoric about the malignancy that he feels Donald Trump represents.
Well, I think a lot of voters in 2016 really didn't believe Donald Trump would win. And so they didn't bother to vote, or they voted for Jill Stein or one of the other candidates, or they just stayed home, especially African-Americans in places like the suburb, in Detroit and around Milwaukee. So I don't think we're going to see that this time around. I mean, everyone knows what the reality of a, you know, Trump administration is. And so I think it's the choice is much more clear.
Also, what about coronavirus in last night's election? I mean, particularly in light of the fact that after Biden gave that speech, he started talking about we have to listen to our health officials. We have to listen to the CDC. We have to listen to science. I mean, he made all those points. And you wonder how many people turned out who may have, in fact, liked the idea of Medicare for all, but felt that this leadership is just not doing it.
Right.
I mean, it's not acting in a way that really serves citizens.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also – I don't think it's quite fair to also say that it's the same voters in 2016 who have now switched over to vote for Biden. I mean, there's new voters in this primary. I think that's a good sign for Democrats in general.
Despite coronavirus.
There are voters in – I mean, just look at the suburbs west of Detroit. These are largely Republican conservative suburbs who are people who are crossing over and voting in a Democratic primary. So I don't think it's quite apples to apples in terms of people who voted for Sanders in 2016 switching over. This is an expanding electorate in the Democratic primary that's helping Biden.
Well, let's bring our listeners into this. I've got a question about the demographics that I'm going to go to here. But if you have questions about last night, we're talking about, excuse me, election 2020 and the March 10th Democratic primary results, or if you have some thoughts about really what they mean and how you interpret them, how you analyze them. We'd like to hear what they are. Any questions you have, you can give us a call right now. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, and you can join us at that number again. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org, talking with Guy Maserati, Scott Schaefer, and Marisa Lagos. And a listener asks, well, did voter demographics in Michigan change between 2016 and 2020? Indeed, they did. But let's talk about that.
Guy?
Yeah. I mean, I think
he was nodding his head.
There's definitely a change. And again, this is a – while it's not maybe the sign that we thought coming into the Democratic primary, where I think when we saw Bernie Sanders jump out to early leads, we thought, oh, maybe this is the election where younger voters are going to be the voters expanding the electorate. It's really – more conservative voters who traditionally have not voted in Democratic primaries. We saw that in suburban South Carolina. We saw it last night in suburban Michigan. I think that's where you're seeing the shift in the electorate, where it is these older, largely white conservative voters who are expanding the electorate.
And this is really well,
let me just read a comment here from Joe, who says, why do people keep saying all Bernie supporters are young? I'm 70. My friends are all over 50. They all support Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Bernie's getting, again, more support on the West Coast.
I was looking at the numbers this morning. It's actually getting much closer. You know, they're continuing to count.
In
California. I think it's maybe 28, 35 or 4 right now. So, you know, a lot of the reason, I mean, Sanders was very well organized in California. He did very well among Latino voters. You can't take that away from him. But he also benefited from the early vote, I think, that people that cast ballots for Amy Klobuchar and for Steyer to a certain extent, Pete Buttigieg. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of that in Washington State as well, where a lot of people had already voted before some of this, you know, really began to coalesce.
Definitely. By the way, a lot of buzz is saying that Klobuchar is going to be his running mate, Biden's. Any dope on that?
You know, I think they're hopefully going to assess what he needs to win. And certainly a woman, I think we all agree on that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question he needs a woman. I think that there are a lot of more progressive folks. We're going to have Amy Allison in here on Thursday for a special that would really like to see a woman of color. But I think to Scott's point, you got to look at the map, the electoral map, and think about who is Biden winning? Who does he need help with? To Guy's point, you know, I think there's this outstanding question, like with these voters maybe crossing over party lines or more conservative people voting for Biden, can they sort of keep those people and expand the electorate to younger and more people of color? I think that's the bigger question.
And again, Marisa Lagos is politics correspondent with KQED and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown. And here's a caller. Victoria joins us. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just want to bring up something that I don't hear people talking about in mainstream or news outlets. Joe Biden has so many videos of himself kind of losing his temper and being really inappropriate to not only his staff, but the public. There was a video that even came out this morning, and I don't hear that being discussed.
He did
get angry at a United Auto Workers guy who said, you know, you're taking my guns away, I guess, right?
Yeah, so I think there's a difference between if videos of him yelling at staff or something like that. I think that's a separate issue. I actually think the video of him yelling at the auto worker probably plays well with a lot of people. I think it's
especially
authentic. Yeah. It's him. And I think in a moment with a Trump, I mean, I think the bigger question is the sort of, in some ways, the gaffes, the, you know, he hasn't always been as present on a debate stage and sort of as quick on his feet as I think he's going to need to be if indeed he ends up being the nominee and he debates Trump. But, you know, I think
he's got a great issue there. I mean, he's talking about Trump being essentially a slave to the NRA, and he's been emphasizing the fact. I mean, last night in a speech, his acceptance speech, triumphant speech it was indeed, he was talking about schools need to be safe and all the implications where we're going to do something about gun reform.
Yeah, I think those are issues, especially, you know, universal background checks that really have 85-90% support. Those are safe things that he was trying to distinguish between this notion, as was claimed with Obama and Hillary Clinton as well, that they want to take all their guns away. I don't think anyone except maybe Beto O'Rourke has said that. Maybe the auto worker yesterday was confusing him with Beto. I don't know. But
well,
Biden's
Beto did endorse him after all. Let me take the caller. We're going to get more of your calls on here. Let me go next to Andrew. Andrew, you're on. Morning.
Hey, thanks for having me. You know, I will tell you that the most frustrating thing to me at this juncture is Hillary Clinton lost at either a 50-50 or 51-49 or won at 51-49. Either way, we're talking about basically a 50-50 split across the country. Joe Biden, to me, is at best going to reach that. And at this juncture, I just don't understand how anyone with a hope for the future of the country can say a 50-50 shot is our best bet. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, guy nodding his head.
I don't think there's any evidence that Biden winning will dramatically restructure what we've seen in recent American politics, which is just a swing back and forth between Democrats winning, Republicans winning. I think what you could argue is if the idea is Democrats need an expanded pool of voters in November, the evidence thus far in the primary is that Joe Biden is more likely to deliver a larger pool of voters.
And it doesn't need to be a dramatic swing in states like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan. It was only 77,000 votes combined in those three states.
But the assumption was that somehow Bernie Sanders wouldn't bring in what is needed in terms of turning the Congress and particularly the Senate more toward the Democrats.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people down ballot in purple districts and some of the districts that Guy was referring to a moment ago, these more conservative districts where Democrats took seats away from Republicans. There's a lot of concern. Florida as a state, you know, with a big Cuban American population where, you know, Biden is ahead by 40, 45 points in some polls. I think those are the kinds of races that will be very competitive with Joe Biden at the top of the ticket because he's not going to push people away in the way that I think Bernie Sanders might have.
Somebody was saying that Bernie lost Florida within 24 hours because of the remarks about Castro, followed by remarks that were critical of Israel. And in some sense, there's, I think, some wisdom behind that. They were certainly not by any standpoint extreme remarks, but, you know, in terms of the constituency and the Florida voters, let's get another caller on. That's Barbie. Good morning. You're on the air with us.
Hi. I agree on a lot of the things that you guys are mentioning as far as the issues that we have with Biden and the issues that we have with Sanders. But my biggest concern, we've been talking a lot about the Republicans voting for Biden, and I keep an eye on what's going through the Republican areas of media and stuff as well. One of the things is that Republicans were encouraged in anywhere where they were allowed to vote in the Democratic primary, they were encouraged to go out and vote for Biden because he's the candidate they think they can tear down the fastest. Does that concern anybody?
I had heard the exact opposite.
They were mainly concerned about getting Sanders.
I think it's really, you know what? Look, the Trump campaign knows no more than any of us do, right? About what the world is going to look like by November. About really, like, I mean, I think ultimately, there's probably camps on both sides of that, you know, question within the Republican base and within the establishment. And I think that clearly they see Biden as a threat because Trump spent the majority of 2019 trying to dirty him up with the whole Ukraine thing. you know,
I'm very skeptical of, like, when people say voters strategically try to cross over party to help the weakest candidate.
I just don't think it helps.
Well, yeah.
And especially at this
scale. It didn't work in South Carolina.
I just don't think voters think that way, most voters.
And when we're talking about, you know, votes in some of these suburban areas going up by 50%, I mean, that's a lot of people deciding to spend their day, you know, plotting.
Playing mischief.
Well, it seems more like if that is happening, if there are more conservative, traditional Republicans or independents crossing over, it's not to sabotage one of the Democrats, it's to prop up Biden because they think he can be, like, it seems like it's more of the never Trumpers who might be doing that if there's a strategy.
They're already starting in a campaign, though, about Biden having cognitive difficulties. I mean, you can see that.
This is the whisper campaign. I got a text last night from a Republican operative who is well known to all of us here, who will remain nameless, and just forwarding something from somebody else. You know, they're already starting to call Joe Biden senile. I mean, that's the word that I keep hearing. You know, look, I think a lot of the attitudes and feelings about these two guys, Trump and Biden, are kind of baked in.
Right.
You know, I don't think, you know, no one's going
to
be shocked. No one's
going
to be shocked
them.
To know that Joe Biden kind of like rambles off into word salad every now and then, and that he's kind of disappears from the debate stage for, you know, long periods of time.
He's always been an artist of the gaffe.
And people know that Trump is, you know, at variance with the truth on a regular basis. I mean, it's like, I don't think that's going to really sway a lot of voters.
Let me read a couple comments. David writes, my 80-year-old father voted for Bernie for 2016, but ended up voting for Biden yesterday. After weighing the options, he wanted to select the person he thought could best be Trump, and that probably speaks for a lot of people. Ron writes, Biden needs to move toward health care for all. He also needs to address worker issues, student debt, etc. A longer-term vision is very possible. Certainly, again, a lot of people on the left, I think, are seeing Biden that way.
I think there's going to be a couple of really interesting things if indeed Biden is the nominee, around his running mate, what his sort of policy platforms, if they are sort of pushed left at all or if they stay where they are. I mean, I do think he, you know, everyone has been positioning themselves for the last year in the context of the crowded primary field, and that ended very quickly. And so I think that there's a lot of open questions about sort of how he approaches this and who he brings in. And I mean, I was even thinking this year, I wonder if either of these people, I think it was more likely if it's Sanders, but are going to be more open about talking about who they might put in their cabinet or things like that, because I think there's this idea of, you know, on the Democratic side of sort of this return to normalcy we're talking about. And I think the signaling is going to be really important.
Well, have you seen those advertisements that say if you think you want to vote or sit this one out or not vote because of what happened as a result of this primary, think about federal judicial appointments. Think about replacing possibility Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Think about Betsy DeVos. I mean, all of these things are sort of moving forward in social media.
And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Biden, looks like he is going to be the nominee, announces his vice presidential choice a little early, just to kind of, because I do think that both actually Trump and Biden, but and Sanders as well, I mean, given their age, who the vice president is you
it's
know,
very
they have a pretty
yeah.
decent chance, like a 20% or so chance of becoming president one way or another. And so
let's bring another caller on here quickly. Charlie, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Look, I get why Sanders supporters are disappointed with the outcome, but this wasn't manipulation by some shadowy establishment. The rank and file of voters made their choice. So, you know, having temper tantrums where their supporters decide to sit it out, that just sounds like self-indulgent nihilism. We can't really afford it.
Well, thank you for that call. And a quick response if I get from any of you who want to respond to Aaron, who writes, we just got about less than a minute here, but he says, it seems to me Biden is winning in states that are either solid Democrat or solid Republican. Sanders is winning in swing states.
Well,
not Michigan.
Michigan's not. Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I think. I
But I'm still interested in the western regional side
of
this.
Well, let's see what happens next week. We've got Ohio, Illinois, Florida. I mean, I think we're going to – I think that'll clarify that kind of question. But, you know, it's true. South Carolina, not going to be in the Democratic column. Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee. But it does show not just strength among African-American voters, but turnout up generally, which is, you know, I think an enthusiasm that Democrats have for, you know, defeating Trump.
We will leave it there. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Marisa. Thank you, Guy. And when we return, we're going to talk about, well, what's going on with Bay Area school closures. Lots to talk about on that score. So stay tuned. It's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.